Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by introducing the redesigned CatholicSingles.com, featuring new ways that put the spotlight on the person and their faith, not just a profile picture. For the past 20 years, faithful Catholics have used CatholicSingles.com, and the reimagined CatholicSingles.com website is ready to help single Catholics take the next step in sharing meaningful relationships with other faithful Catholics. Remember, CatholicSingles.com, for faith, fellowship, and love. CMF Curo is the country's first Catholic healthcare ministry to provide an affordable health-sharing solution rooted in Catholic teaching and community. Learn more at mycatholichealthcare.com. That's mycatholichealthcare.com. CMF Curo, healthcare fully alive.
Here we are. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to Beneath the Surface here at WCAP Radio. Glad you could join us tonight. And I am glad to be back. Beneath the Surface, actually, unbeknownst to you perhaps, has taken a hiatus for about a month. And we are finally back live. So if you've been listening to Beneath the Surface the past 4 or 5 weeks, you have actually been listening to what they call, the best of Beneath the Surface, or at least not the worst of it. Repeats, but glad to be back. Cindy, how are you doing? It's good to see you again after a month's vacation.
I'm okay.
Good. Anything new in the past month?
Just waiting for you to get back.
Okay. So you've been just sitting in that chair just waiting for Beneath the Surface to come back live, right?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, there is nothing more important, I guess, in life than that. All right. And across the console from me, that was Cindy, who is from on my left behind the glass, but across the console is my guest and yours. Ladies and gentlemen, there he is, Mr. Kent Niebuhr.
How are you, Paul? It's good to be back.
Complain I can't.
Yeah, so you were away for a while?
I was away.
Tell us about that.
I was amongst palm trees and 80-degree weather every day. Yeah.
Wow.
It was awesome.
I don't know. People are probably turning off the radio now.
Yeah, every day I would get up from bed and put on shorts and a T-shirt. Didn't matter which one it was.
Yeah.
And I was good for the whole day.
Where was this?
It was, well, first it was in Delray Beach, Florida, and then we crossed Alligator Alley and finished the vacation in Naples, Florida.
Wow. And you know people down there, or this was just
an
out-and-out vacation?
I do. The wife's family is in the East Coast, and my family is on the West Coast.
Oh, my goodness. So what are you doing up here in the snow?
Freezing to death, like you.
Yeah, right.
Yes.
Right.
Well, we all grew up here in New England, and a lot of us had run away from home.
Yeah.
If you will.
Yep.
Yeah. I did that when I was in my 20s, and then I came back home.
Yeah, I did that too. Yeah. I did exactly that too. I got as far as Atlanta, Georgia. I didn't get any further south than that, except for a few excursions.
But I lived 2 years in California,
mm-hmm.
in North Hollywood and Burbank.
Yeah.
And then I moved to Tampa, Florida, and lived there 5 years.
Wow. In your 20s.
Yes, all in my 20s, and I came back when I was 31. So I guess early 30s.
Why'd you come back?
I was going to get I got accepted in graduate program in Providence College, so I came back to New England. And, of course, my family was still here. They hadn't run away from home yet.
Now, I grew up on Long Island in New York, and I went down as far as Atlanta, Georgia. I spent the mid-90s down there, and I came back because I got accepted to a graduate program.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Did you end up going to it?
I did, yeah.
Oh, I did not know that about you.
Yeah, Fordham University.
Graduate in what?
Medieval history.
Really cool.
Yeah.
No wonder you're such a genius.
I don't know.
Yeah. But anyway, ladies and gentlemen, thanks for joining us. A little bit into our personal lives. Tonight, Kent and I, and you, are going to delve beneath the surface on the topic of kowtowing to the left. What can be learned from the Covington High School debacle? 978-454-4980 is our phone number, the BTS hotline, if you want to get involved in our conversation. Love to have you. Again, 978-454-4980. Or you can simply jot down any comments you'd like at facebook.com/fellowtruthseekers. All one word. All right, Mr. Kent. So it's been all over the news. People know the specifics probably better than I do. I really haven't been following it all that deeply.
Yeah.
I've been following the surface of it, but I think that in order to go beneath the surface, we need to take some general principles out of what happened here with this story, you might call a social debacle, and talk about what it may mean in the bigger picture for the church and the world. So apparently a high school group of kids went down to the March for Life in Washington, D.C., which, by the way, from everything that I've heard, had at least 500,000 people in it.
That's a pretty good number of people.
Half a million. And, of course, it was a virtual media blackout, as it is every year since 1973, because the media does not want to give credence to the fact that there are still some people, despite their hard efforts for the past four decades, there are still some people who are against legalized murder of preborn children.
So would you say that that exemplifies a media bias?
That was a very funny question, Kent. That is an understatement. That is the biggest understatement you could have made all night.
Would you say it exemplifies a media agenda?
I certainly would.
Wow,
hey, you make a good radio host.
So where does that leave us with the media then?
Well, that is a good important side question to this. Where does it leave us with a media that has been pretty much hijacked, along with the academia world, the academic world, with the cultural left?
Yeah,
and I don't know if anybody denies that. Even the cultural left, I don't think, would deny that. Most of the cultural left today is in those culture-molding establishments of the media and academia.
Right. And it seems that we have this Covington Catholic as an example, another example. So you have this sort of epicenter. Washington, D.C., what was it now? Two weeks ago?
It was the 19th, maybe.
Okay.
The 20th.
And... yeah, a week and a half ago. So we have this situation where you have the March for Life going on in Washington, D.C., and as you said, somewhere in the neighborhood of 500,000 people marched in this March for Life.
Mostly young.
Mostly young, yeah.
Braved the sub-freezing weather, of course.
Very cold temperatures.
Yes.
It was not the coldest on record, as I understand, but it was very, very cold. So they braved this situation, and... there's this, as is, you know, likely to happen in Washington, D.C., there are lots of things going on, and there was a group of Native Americans who were having their own rally of sorts that was wrapping up, kind of overlapping with the beginning of the March for Life. And so we had this confrontation take place between Nathan Phillips, who is the... Native American with the drum that we've seen images of.
Yeah.
And the sort of money shot, if you will, is this picture of a young man, a white male, a white Catholic male from a Catholic school, and he's wearing a red Make America Great Again hat, along with other, he was there with his school, so there were other Catholic students there. Some others had the hats on.
Now, as you're building this image, let me just say this. You have just built a true image of what happens, but just that image in and of itself is probably so, I was going to say difficult. I would say impossible for the progressive media to resist. You've got a young white male in a hat that says Make America Great Again.
From a Catholic school.
From a Catholic school in the midst of a March for Life. It's almost funny. A March for Life.
They were salivating over it.
I mean, how could they possibly resist that? I mean, as it turns out, they, of course, were uncovered for the imposters that they are because they got no facts. They did not know what they were talking about when they reported what they did.
Yep.
But I can understand on a very cynical level how they could not resist that shot.
Yeah, how they maybe didn't quite dig as deeply as they ought to have to verify the story before they jump to conclusions. And because it's the image is so easy to manipulate for their agenda.
Oh, very easy.
So easy. Very it seems easy. To play right into it.
Hey,
so
you have a minority gentleman who is hitting his drum.
Right.
Accusing this white kid with a MAGA hat of whatever he's accusing him of. I don't even know. Do you know?
Yeah, he was saying that he was impeding his progress. So
okay.
Nathan Phillips, the Native American playing the drum and chanting, was trying. He says he was trying to walk through the crowd, and Nathan, sorry, now I forgot the kid's name.
Nick Sandman?
Yes, Nick Sandman impeded his progress. He would not get out of his way. And I believe what Nathan Phillips said was when Nathan Phillips tried to go to the right, Sandman blocked his access to the right, and he tried to go to the left, and Sandman blocked his access to the left. But then more and more videos came out, longer and longer videos came out, and it seemed like none of this was quite as cut and dry as it had first been reported. Some of it's ambiguous. Some of it you can't tell what exactly is happening in this, I don't want to say melee, but it's just, you know, a packed crowd of people, very densely packed. But it's pretty clear from what has subsequently come out that Nathan Phillips' version of the story is suspect at best. Mm. And then, of course, some additional stories have come out that seem to paint him as kind of a career agitator, that he...
The Native American, that is.
Yes,
okay.
That he... How should I say this? That he seems to show up in places where trouble is happening and seems to be rather at the epicenter.
Did he and others try to interrupt a mass that was going on at the cathedral or something like that?
I don't know.
Did I hear that?
I don't know.
Okay.
But there was another group that was involved in this incident called the Black Hebrew Israelites. I think I have that name right.
Black Hebrew Israelites.
Right.
Yeah.
And they're... They call themselves a Christian group, but they were in this chaos. They were yelling racial slurs at the kids in the pro-life march, and they were also yelling at a priest. Boy, I wish I could remember the quote, but calling him a child molester and other really unsavory names.
Let's look at this for a second. Were these black people that were doing this?
Yes.
Okay, black Israelites? Is that what they're called?
They're called the Black
Israelites. Is it racism when black people yell racial slurs at white people?
It's, of course, because you're making prejudicial statements about someone based upon their race. That's racism.
And is child abuse something that can also be verbal, or does it have to be only physical?
Sure, yeah.
Okay. Now, these are high school kids, right?
Yep.
So here you have a sort of a double whammy. What exactly was their problem with the situation? Why were they hurling these insults?
I think... from the reportage that I read, they were trying to somehow be on the side of the Native American with the drum.
Okay.
So they saw him as a minority,
and
so the two minorities banded together. This is the way the reportage seems to portray it. And then they joined...
Okay. Well, this is a perfect story. I mean, if I was the very cynical, skeptical media, I would probably have paid people like this, because this creates such a great story. You have black Israelites, and you have a Native American against Catholic white people at a pro-life march. This paints the narrative almost stereotypically of what they want to...
Of how Catholics are stereotyped. Yeah.
Yeah, so I guess that's half the story. The real, or the more powerful half, if you will, is the reaction to it.
Sure, yeah. The reporting taking on a life of its own.
The reporting of it and the condemnation that came from that reporting.
Which was I want to say either universal or virtually universal. So these kids were actually condemned by the diocese in which their school is. They were condemned by their local bishop.
The Catholic Diocese of Covington.
Yep.
And their local bishop.
Yep. And they were condemned by just...
Now, two things would have to happen there. Number one, or maybe one of two things. Number one, an immediate trust of the media.
Immediate? Assumed?
Yeah, an assumed trust of the media.
Yep.
Either that happened with the bishop and his office, or a fear of the left, pretty much.
Yeah.
A fear of the leftist-generated media.
Right.
So do you think it is A or B, or both?
I think it's probably both. I don't think we have to discriminate between those
so
two.
So it's both
motives.
The mind and the will that was
yeah.
the problem here.
So, yeah, right. You just implicitly trust the media. I guess, you know, I mean, there's still a persistent assumption that reporting is supposed to be unbiased, and we...
But who assumes that anymore in 2019?
I think that's the sort of instinctive or reflexive reaction to reporting, yeah. and then mm-hmm. it's not until you sort of analyze the news reporting critically that you yeah. start to realize that there are problems with it.
Yeah, I agree that it is sort of a traditional reflexive thing, because... Mm-hmm. If you go in the news, you figure these people are news people, mm-hmm. which means they deal with it in an unbiased way.
Yeah, that it's just the facts,
yeah.
who, what, when, where, why, and how, and that
yeah,
everything
just the
is
facts,
portrayed
ma'am.
Accurately, and you check your facts.
What
right?
was that, Dragnet? Just the facts, ma'am?
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think in the past few decades that we have, I think as a society, not just yeah. those, not just a few that are looking in, we have recognized what is really going on and the kind of world view or life view that most people in the media have today that would
yeah.
color
mm-hmm.
their or bias their stories.
Right. But it's hard to remember that when what is presented, the way things are reported,
yeah.
has this facade of objectivity.
Yes.
They're telling you this happened and this happened and this happened. Now let's go get the reaction from the witnesses.
Right.
Right. So they're but then what we found out in this story, which makes you wonder about all other stories that they report on, is wait a minute. When they say this happened and this happened, they're not really correct, are they? They're actually either making some of that up or
yeah,
they're well, not checking their facts.
And hence we have this new, it's probably one of the newer phrases in the lexicon today, and the fake news media.
Fake news?
We'll talk about this and other things after this break. You're listening to Beneath the Surface here at WCAP Radio. Kent Niebuhr is my guest tonight. Paul Morano here with you until 11 o'clock. We need to take a quick break, so we will be right back after this. And we're back. 978-454-4980 is the Beneath the Surface hotline. 978-454-4980. And tonight on Beneath the Surface, we are talking about the, it is entitled, or at least subtitled, Kowtowing to the Left. What can be learned from the Covington High School debacle? Mr. Kent, welcome back to segment number two.
Hey, welcome back, Paul.
It's good to get a breath.
Is
you know,
it Covington
come to the
High
surface
School or Covington Catholic High School?
I think it's a Catholic high school,
okay.
So we can say it that way.
All right.
Covington Catholic.
We want to report accurately, Paul.
Thank you, Mr. Kent.
That's what I'm here for.
All right. So what does this say about the media? What does this say about society? And what does this say about the courage or the lack of it? Even in the church today, Mr. Kent.
Yeah, you know, I think that if you're just going to accept everything that's kind of thrown up in your face, then you're not doing anybody any favors. We really have to question people's assertions. We really have to be, you know, think more critically, analytically about some of the arguments that are made, some of the claims that are made.
All right, so no longer can we assume and take on faith the expertise, and I put that in quotes, of journalism today. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, or the objectivity of journalism. And, I guess if you really scratch the surface, even if you went back a generation ago. I don't know, go back to the 50s even. Was there an agenda?
Let's go back to Walter Cronkite.
Yeah,
that's
right.
That's usually where people go to when they think about the last
but objective. Was he entirely objective? Can we fact check Walter Cronkite?
Well, I mean, you're asking a philosophical question. Yeah. Can any human being be entirely objective about anything that occurs?
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
And you probably would have to say no.
But there's a spectrum.
There's a huge spectrum difference. You can be perhaps 90-95% objective,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
I would think.
It seems like you go back to the Walter Cronkite era, and there was at least an authentic effort at objectivity. The media was kind of holding itself accountable, even if it didn't quite meet the standard perfectly or authentically. Mm. It at least had that sense of responsibility to be objective.
Yeah, and I don't know if we can pinpoint a particular time in journalistic history, but some people are looking at what Dan Rather did with George Bush the First.
Yeah.
About you know that story that he got wrong. I don't know if you remember, but it was about military service. I'm sorry, George Bush the was it the first or the second? Gosh, now I'm a little confused.
About military service?
Yeah. Anyway, Dan Rather got a story wrong, and mm-hmm. I'm sure some of our listeners may correct me on this. He got a story wrong, and it was the first time that a major journalist, like a CBS journalist mm-hmm. like Dan Rather, said something that wasn't corroborated, assuming the worst.
Mm.
And he apologized, didn't he? Yeah, and a lot of people would say, well, that was sort of the beginnings of the fake news era, of the biased news era.
Yep.
And then, of course, came cable television, and then you have, you know, the three biggies, CBS, yep. MSNBC, and Fox News, and they're all trying to carve out their niche.
Yep.
And eventually, Fox News always had this straightforward, conservative kind of outlook on the world.
Yep.
CNN kind of had a centrist, liberal outlook on the world at the beginning of its existence. MSNBC mm-hmm. was schizophrenic. I don't know if you remember this.
I always remember MSNBC as being pretty liberal.
Even Alan Keyes was on MSNBC. They sort of went from liberal to conservative.
Yeah, but he would be a token conservative, don't you think? They sort of trot him out there.
But they didn't really have an identity their first, I don't know, maybe decade of existence.
Yeah.
Until finally somebody came in and they said, we're going to go all liberal progressive. And then Rachel Maddow took 8 o'clock, and then they surrounded her with all these other liberals. And then, of course, that's its image right now,
right.
Its identity.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But this is the era that we live in now. Depending on the news source that you turn on, you will get a whole different viewpoint of the world.
Right.
I mean, how is that possible?
And, you know, here's the problem. We tend to, because the media still presents what it does in sort of this superficially objective way, If we like the newscaster, if we're entertained by it, we're going to sort of bundle that all together, right? That they're likable, they're entertaining, and they're giving me the news. We don't really want to question that too much. And if we do, where do we go? Because then we think, okay, I'm watching MSNBC, I really like it. But what do I do my fact checking? Or does that mean I have to watch Fox now in order to get the other side? And then what's the truth? Is it MSNBC? Is it Fox? Or is it some combination of the two, like some meet in the middle kind of thing?
Well, right now you have to clump in MSNBC and CNN, as well as, really, ABC, CBS, and NBC, all of them together as the mass media, along with the
well, this is TV broadcast.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Along with the New York Times and the Washington Post and most major newspapers in the United States, they're all sort of on one side. And it has come that talk radio and Fox News television is sort of on another side. And that's pretty much what you have today.
It is kind of interesting, though, that talk radio is overwhelmingly conservative. There is very little
Yeah.
Liberal talk
you
radio.
You know, I saw a clip the other night.
It's out there. There are some.
Bill Maher. You know Bill Maher.
Yes, I do.
Liberal TV host of political. It used to be called Politically Incorrect. Maybe it still is. He said to a guest that he had a little while ago, what's his name? The young guy who's very, very astute and sharp. Ben Shapiro.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He said that he congratulated Ben for being on a show because he said fellow liberals of Bill Maher don't like to come on his show. And it just that sort of points to what has been happening for the past few decades, and that is that liberals or progressives do not enjoy or like or even are comfortable with arguing their positions.
Yeah, well, I don't...
And that's why talk radio doesn't really work for progressives.
Yeah, right, because you're going to have callers and things like that. It seems like when you think of liberal radio, what comes to mind? Public broadcasting.
Yeah, yeah.
There are no call-in shows on public broadcasting.
No, there's
they
none.
They give their dissertations,
yes,
and you just absorb it.
That's right.
I can tell you, to your point, in terms of arguing liberal arguments, several years ago now, boy, I don't know, 10 years ago, it was when Ted Kennedy died.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if I told this story on this program before, but I'll tell it again. Ted Kennedy died, and we had a special election here in Massachusetts to elect who would be the senator to take his place.
Yeah.
And it was at the election, Scott Brown won the election.
Right.
Now, it was just a few days before that, and I was at a child's birthday party, and it was a lot of family members and things like that, so you had all these generations at this party, and there was a conversation where they were talking about the election. I was not originally part of this conversation, but there was one gentleman who was trying to make conservative arguments against four people in their 60s. And maybe 70s, but definitely their 60s. And the four people in their 60s were talking about, they were all talking about the election, and the four people in their 60s were arguing that we have to vote for whoever the pro-choice, the pro-abortion candidate would be, against whoever would be the pro-life candidate. And so this became a conversation now, away from the campaign or away from the election, to the abortion debate. And this conservative individual was kind of holding his own for a while, but it got very complicated. And so at one point I went and sat down, and just to make a long story short, my wife says I sat down and talked to these four people in their 60s, 70s, and for about an hour and a half. And I took on every pro-choice, pro-abortion argument they had, refuted every single one of them. And by the way, one of these gentlemen has a master's degree in philosophy.
Okay.
So he's not really a slouch. You can't say these are just knee-jerk kind of superficial thinkers, right? You can, but at least not on the face of it. So by the time I was done, I took on every single one of their arguments, refuted all of them, and they were all silenced. And they just, after an hour and a half of this, they were looking at each other like anybody
else
got anything.
You see, that doesn't go over good on radio or even television.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
That's the problem.
So, and then one of the women, it was two men and two women, and one of the women looked at the other woman and said, well, Kent is just young, and by the time he matures a little bit,
that's not an argument.
Exactly.
See,
there's no argument.
In order to be successful on radio or television, you have to explain and defend your position.
Right.
And that's why talk radio is 90-some-odd% conservative.
Right.
Talk, because
they have actual arguments.
They have, they understand their position, and they can explain it, and they can defend it. Whereas usually,
and it's rational,
those who are on the progressive side have a position from their own biases, from their experience, or their emotional being that they just are very passionate about, but they don't precisely know why, and they really can't defend it.
Sure. So,
it seems like this is a fruit of a deeper philosophical problem here, that the progressive left today does not truly believe that there is an objective truth.
They have to, because if you don't actually have arguments, and it's funny because people would ask me, well, if I'm talking to someone who believes this, if I'm talking to an atheist, or if I'm talking to a pro-abortion or if, you know, pro-choice, what do I say? What are my arguments? And, you know, there are lots of great arguments out there. But what I always tell them, if you don't really have time or whatever it might require to get all these arguments accumulated, just keep asking them why.
Mm.
When they make an assertion, you say, really, that's interesting. Why do you believe that?
Yeah.
And then keep going, and it's like an onion. You just keep peeling back layers. And because I used to be an atheist. I used to be pro-choice. I thought there were great reasons for abortions, et cetera. But the more I tried to – it actually happened by me trying to undermine the arguments of my opponents.
Okay.
I realized I actually didn't have any arguments for my positions. They were all like you were describing. They were all sort of knee-jerk, superficial emotion, like I'm avoiding – some sort of inconvenience.
Well, can I go beneath the surface with you, because you have a a keen insight on this, because like you said, before you converted your mind and heart, you thought like this.
Yeah.
What was it that led you to think in a way that you didn't know why you thought that way?
It was easy, because I was born in 1968. I grew up in the 70s, and I was surrounded by this liberal tsunami, and I was brought up in this liberal tsunami. And so,
yeah, but wasn't there something in you that questioned the tsunami at all?
I mean, only superficially, because there was no one I could turn to in my world, or at least that I knew of, or I was aware of, or I thought to, that had any differing opinion.
Did you were you brought up going to church?
No.
Okay.
Not at all.
All right,
I had zero religion. Well, we celebrated Christmas and Easter, but it was in, you know, a secular way.
So the secular progressive tsunami that began in earnest in the 1970s, really early 1970s, just you felt that was
just the norm.
That was reality, and there was no alternative in your mind.
Right.
I knew there were
people who were against abortion. I never actually met one of them.
Yeah.
You know, in that era.
Yeah. Yeah.
I couldn't imagine what their arguments could be. I could not imagine.
Well, but see, this is what I'm curious about. Why couldn't you imagine it if you didn't yourself have any arguments?
Because, you know, the arguments for abortion were, you know, what we still hear today. The mother is a drug addict, or the parents are too poor, or, you know, on and on and on. This is, you know, this is going to ruin this person's future because she's going to have to drop out of college.
That's the big one. Yeah.
And, you know, they don't have the money. They don't have a good.
Now you see those as very superficial arguments.
Yes, yes.
Those are selfish arguments, in your opinion. Now,
I would put it to you this way: they're authentic considerations.
Okay.
But abortion is not the answer. Abortion is
worse.
The anti-answer.
It's the anti-answer.
Yeah, it's
okay.
It actually makes it exacerbates all those things. It makes all those things worse.
Okay, so those are considerations about one's life.
Right, finances are important to consider. Yeah.
But killing one's innocent child in order to fix those problems is not the answer, you're saying.
Killing an innocent person of any age or status is never a legitimate.
But when you were a member of when you were part of that tsunami of the progressive left, you didn't know that?
No, because I believed all the arguments. It's a blob of tissue and things like
that. Without questioning it.
Right.
Really?
I didn't get into the science. I didn't get into DNA, and I didn't get into, you know, fertilization and cell division and all of those things. I just thought, how could that be a human being when it, you know, it does.
But even without getting into science, didn't common sense kind of tell you that a human being begins at their beginning?
I would say.
Period?
I would say that it never got to that, because the arguments I remember watching a show on TV that I want to say. Do you remember after school specials?
Yeah.
I think
they
were on ABC.
Yeah.
Right. I want to say it was an after school special. Maybe it wasn't.
All right.
But whatever it was, I remember sitting in my living room as a kid watching this show where a woman walks into an abortion clinic and she says, "But you know, how do I know that this is not a human being? How do I know that this is not really, you know, a baby?" And the woman holds up this vacuum tube which is, you know, has about the diameter of a half an inch or so.
Okay.
And she says, does it look like we could possibly suck a human being through this tube?
And that was her argument.
That was the argument. Yeah. And she had a beautiful smile on her face.
Yeah, yeah,
I remember this. Had to be 40 years ago.
Yeah.
And I remember watching this program. That was the argument. Could we possibly suck a human being through this tiny little tube?
So the brainwashing was all pervasive for you.
All pervasive.
And it was like a tsunami.
It was everywhere.
And at that point, you didn't really understand the alternative, or that there was a solid alternative to that viewpoint of life.
Just take
that
TV show, for example.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right? I see that, and I go, and I'm thinking to myself, I don't think you could suck a human being through a tube like that. I can't imagine how every human being I know is at least 5 to 10 pounds.
Right, that's that's extremely shallow way of thinking.
Yes.
We need to take a break. I'll attack that shallow way of thinking after this break. But you're listening to Beneath the Surface, as well as the band Boston, right underneath me, telling us we need to take a break. This is our last break of the evening. 978-454-4980. We'll be right back. We're back. Beneath the Surface, till 11 p.m. Paul Morano here with my guest, Mr. Kent Niebuhr. Kind of a unique name, isn't it, Kent? Both of your names.
Can I tell you something?
Not just the first or the second.
There is another Kent Niebuhr somewhere in this country.
No.
Yeah, there is another Kent Niebuhr, and he's like, I want to say...
Does he spell it the same way?
Kansas, Kentucky, something like that. And he's a Catholic who's very active in his past.
No way. He spells it the same way?
Kent
Niebuhr. Both Kent and Niebuhr.
Yes. Yes.
Wow.
Isn't that... That's amazing. One day I got to meet this guy. Kent Niebuhr from
you have
wherever,
Niebuhr. You
Kentucky.
Have, you know, maybe, you know, Jim or Bob Niebuhr, but...
Yeah. Bob Niebuhr was my dad.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And if you have Kent, you figure you'd have Kent Smith or Kent Jones.
Sure, yeah.
But you got Kent Niebuhr. You're a very
unique person.
There
is another Kent Niebuhr out there.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe it. I just discovered that a few years ago.
See, my last name was kind of unique until that was Nissan
so
folks created
a
car, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And of course, they named it after me.
Is that a Nissan?
Yeah, okay. Nissan Murano. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Did you get one?
No, not yet. They're kind of expensive.
They're not giving you one?
They should.
I would think.
You would think so.
Took your name for it.
I know. 978-454-4980. Beneath the Surface here at WCAP. Our main topic, actually, even though we got off of it in an important tangent last segment, is called Kowtowing to the Left, What Can Be Learned from the Covenant Catholic High School Debacle. So, Kent, it seems to, just to bring this full circle, it seems like people who are now running the media grew up right around when you did in that tsunami of progressive liberalism that occurred in the Western world, beginning, I would say, in full force in the beginning of the 1970s. So these folks who run the media establishments really don't understand the alternative to that cynical view of life, do they?
Yeah, and I would say, you know...
That shallow, cynical
view. I would also say that when you look at the alternative as being either Donald Trump or Fox News... You don't really even have... I mean, I don't watch Fox News either because I don't find that they're exactly making the greatest arguments. I might even agree with their conclusions, but they're not...
But their argumentation... Well, it's television. You have short segments.
Exactly. So, but I don't even think they're making arguments half the time. They're just making assertions.
Yes.
So...
Well, at least some of their shows, like... I think Tucker makes some arguments.
Yes, he does.
Hannity doesn't.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I don't find Hannity making arguments.
Right.
I find him just to be as superficial.
Right.
As,
but Donald Trump is not representative of a, you know, of a right way of looking at the universe per se. I mean, he might have some good points, but he's certainly not a poster boy for what you or I would say. This is my side.
Absolutely not.
Yeah.
Donald Trump is a deeply flawed individual, even if he happens to be right in some of his conclusions.
By the way, I think he's... perhaps one of the better presidents this country has had in a long time.
I think he may be. I'm going to kind of reserve. I'm not going to commit too much to that.
Well, I'm not going to commit to it. Yeah. I'm just saying perhaps. And I think he is the most pro-life president in my lifetime.
Absolutely, yeah.
In that respect, somebody can be you can question his character as a personal human being while agreeing Absolutely. With what he's doing right. in the office of
he
presidency.
He may be right about some things,
yeah.
even if he's wrong about other things.
Yeah.
Even if
and what's good, I think, about not having your heart set on any political party is mm-hmm. you can at least try to look more objective at the man who's in the office. Mm-hmm. And and criticize what you don't believe is right, and
sure.
say what you
well,
believe is right.
It's
wrong.
Like we've talked about on this show before. You need to be right. able to separate the person making the arguments
yes.
from the arguments.
Yes.
You want to look at the arguments themselves as opposed to looking at the messenger.
No question.
Right? Just because it's
no
a
question.
Deeply flawed individual delivering
yeah.
the arguments doesn't mean it invalidates.
And if you
arguments.
Look at anybody who's on the progressive left today, who's been infected with progressivism, if you look at their social media pages, 9 times out of 10, they're going off on the person of
exactly.
Donald Trump.
Yes. What
not arguing against what he's saying or why it's wrong or making some rational
oh, yeah.
arguments about
yep.
why they defend their mm-hmm. their progressive positions on things, but it is a verbal assault on the person of Donald
Absolutely.
Trump. Just like, by the way, it was a verbal assault on the person of George Bush when he was president.
Yeah, and I would also say another flaw is that not only attacking the person, but attacking a person's past. Right?
Mm.
Because we have to accept that people could have made horrible mistakes and then learn from them. I tell my kids all the time, I tell everybody all the time, failure is an excellent teacher.
Yeah.
So if you screw up
yeah.
left and right, year after year after year, and then one day you finally see the light, you finally realize
yeah.
what you have been doing wrong all this time,
mm.
you're going to be a very wise individual. We call
yes.
it the school
and you can,
of hard
and you can
knocks.
Help others who are going through that first phase.
Exactly. You
yeah.
can say, hey, I've been
right.
there. I made the same mistakes.
Now, a lot of people would say, well, why don't you give that kind of slack to Bill Clinton? And
yeah.
you would say it was not Bill Clinton's past that was the problem.
His
it was his present.
Yeah,
when
exactly.
he was in office. When he was
exactly.
in office. And what he was
right.
doing in the Oval Office, perhaps.
Right.
We don't know that Mr. Trump is doing anything similar in the
yeah.
Oval Office. So.
But then here's even... Yeah. Even to go back to your first point a minute
yeah.
ago, even if he is,
yes,
it doesn't invalidate his arguments. John F. Kennedy
yes.
is one of I want to say the most beloved United States president in
yeah.
anyone's memory.
Yeah.
However, what do we know about his personal life?
Yeah.
It was horrific.
Didn't really know it back then because
no.
the media was discreet.
Yeah. So
yeah.
the point was, here is a guy who's living a pretty vile personal life,
mm.
but man, did he win over the country with his public persona.
Okay, I think it's important now to go back to the Covington story.
Yeah.
And the media coverage of it.
Right.
Why is everyone so fearful? And I kind of know a reason for this, but I don't think it's a justifiable reason, but I'll let you respond. Why is everyone, including so many within the church today, fearful of the left?
Well, as we
Dennis,
know...
Let me just say one more thing. Dennis Prager, you're familiar with
yes.
this.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
He said that more people fear the left today than they fear God.
That's probably true.
Your response.
I don't know if you can quantify that, but he makes a good point.
Yeah.
I think simply because, how many times do you see... for instance, I saw a priest on Twitter who just posted today. He said, something's going on with my Twitter account because a couple of weeks ago I made an anti-abortion comment and it seems like I lost 1,000 followers
mm-hmm.
and people are wondering where my tweets are, and I tweet all the time. So, you know, if Twitter's controlled
yeah.
by a liberal mindset...
And Facebook
and all of them,
yeah.
They're going to be... They appear to be censoring things.
Okay.
So there's this funny dance that people do because they want to get their message out. So they want to get it out.
It has to be through the media. Yeah.
So they have to kind of,
play the game.
Play this game.
Do the dance.
Liberal media.
And that's basically what most Republican politicians have been doing for the past 30 to 40 years.
50.
They've been 50 years. They've been playing the game. They've been doing the dance with the media
right.
in order to get their message out.
And Donald Trump
is not. And here comes Mr. Donald Trump. And that's why so many people love this guy.
Yeah.
He's not playing the game. He's not doing the dance. He's saying, you guys are fake news nonsense.
Right.
And it's resonating.
Right.
It's resonating with a lot of people. Now, a lot of people hate him for this.
Yeah. From what I can see, and I don't really hunt these things down, but from what I've seen in terms of public opinion polls, the country is really 50-50.
Yeah.
It seems like, and by the way, that seems to have been the case for about the past 20 years at least.
Yeah, but we need to ask the question, 50-50 on what? Now, if you're just going to say the general way that people vote, either Democrat or Republican, no question about it. But then if you get a little more specific, because Democrats are a coalition of a lot of people, you've got minorities who feel that the Democrats are going to help them, even though Democrats really want them to be dependent so that they can have their votes. Mm-hmm. That's another whole show.
Yeah.
And you have young people who also think that a more socialized state is better for their own interests.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And then you have, It depends on the question you ask.
Yeah. And a lot of it, too, is based upon, I mean, if you're going to be surveying the population, a lot of people are hanging on. Just like we said, a lot of people trust the media because at one time the media was trustworthy.
Mm.
A lot of people are hanging on to obsolete concepts of the political parties, particularly the Democrats.
Oh my gosh!
Right. So
a
lot of people say this is not your father's Democratic
Party. This is huge because our father's generation is sort of is disappearing. You know, unfortunately, but that's what happens. Each generation goes
disappears.
I think when the World War II generation disappears fully, you will have. And they're almost all gone now.
Yeah.
But you will have a much more realistic understanding. Of the Democratic Party.
Right, but because the problem is it's too late.
Some people still hold on to an FDR Democratic Party.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know?
Or even a JFK.
Or an LBJ Democratic Party.
It's
really the party of insanity right now, and the party of death, because insanity leads to death.
Sure.
With minorities and single women tagging along beside them.
Yeah, socialists.
Yes.
Right. But I think that socialism is, as you say, it's this fear of death, this fear that I'm not going to be able to feed myself.
Yeah.
That leads people to consider socialism, take it seriously. St. Paul says fear of death made us slaves to sin. And I think that's pretty much sums it up.
Well, that's the bottom line. If Christ is God and he did rise from the dead and he did conquer death for the rest of us, then there is no more reason for fear of death.
Exactly.
And if we don't have fear of death, we don't need to have fear of anything else.
Right. Then I don't need socialism, because if I can't figure out a way to make it on my own and I starve to death, well, I did my best, but now I'll end up in heaven, God willing.
Now, speaking of fear of death, I think I think to go full circle, this is an important point to make. I think the reason why this whole Covington High School debacle happened is because it was a pro-life rally.
Yeah.
Abortion, whether you like it or not, whether you're tired of it or not, everyone who's listening, it is and always has been for the past 4 to 5 decades ground zero in the spiritual, cultural, political, and philosophical battle that is happening in the world today, particularly in the United States.
Yeah, you could definitely say that.
And that's why the media, I think, is going crazy with that story, even before they got any of the facts.
That's right. And they ended up getting the facts wrong, because the media or the left's presuppositions about pro-life people are...
Well,
invalid.
Well, they are not only invalid, but they're wishful thinking because of the narrative that they have created is one of them keeping power.
Yeah, they make what's called straw man arguments. In other words, when the left puts words in the mouths of the right, saying, well, this is why they're against abortion because they don't believe in a woman's right to choose, or they're anti-women, or they're any number of things.
Yeah.
What these aren't the arguments on the right. The arguments don't come from there at all. So when the media is giving you, when the left is telling you what the right is saying, they're getting it wrong. And so we're always on the defensive. Mm. And then when they start to believe their own press, they're going to end up with an incident like the Covington Catholic High School kids.
Yeah, yeah.
They're going to assume that that's what those kids stood for, and they missed the point entirely, and it kind of blew up in their faces.
So be extremely careful about what you believe through the mainstream media.
Yeah, right.
And that, I think that's certainly one lesson that we can take from this
story.
And
learn to live without it.
And learn to live without the mainstream media, and trust first the goodwill of people.
Especially give people the benefit of the doubt.
Okay.
Give people the benefit of the doubt.
Thank you, Mr. Kent. Thank you, Mr. Kent.
My pleasure.
Thank you, everyone, for listening. You've been listening to Beneath the Surface. Glad you could make it this week. We'll see you again next week. Same time, same channel. Paul Morano signing off. Have a great week, everyone.
Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by Jack Kane Ford. Find your next Ford Tough vehicle at KaneFord.com. Woodhill Community Center. Have a hand in the heart of the city. Support their mission with your donations at WoodhillCommunityCenter.org. Toyota in Nicholasville Superstore. Online consultants are standing by right now to help you find your next Toyota. Visit Toyota on Nicholasville.com. Lexus of Lexington, home of the best-selling Lexus IS. Find yours today at LexusOfLexington.com.